All right, listeners, ready to dive into some murky legal waters today?
Arky is right.
We're taking on a listener question about limited partnerships and liability.
Yeah.
All coming from a case that went all the way up to the Washington Supreme Court Frigidaire Sales Corp.
Yeah.
V. Union Properties, Inc.
You know what makes this case so interesting?
What's that?
It really gets to the heart of a question I think a lot of people have about limited partnerships.
Okay.
Like, can you be involved in the business without losing that limited liability protection?
Right, because LPs are attractive for a reason, right?
Yeah.
You can potentially make a great return without the risk of being personally liable for debts.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, of course, something goes terribly wrong.
Right.
And in this Frigidaire case, well, things definitely took a turn.
Yeah, they did.
So to really grasp what happened here, we need to quickly break down how limited partnerships are structured.
Okay. So you've got your general partners who are responsible for the day-to-day operations and face unlimited liability.
Yeah.
Meaning their personal assets are on the line.
Right.
Then you've got your limited partners.
Yeah.
Who are typically investors and enjoy limited liability. Their risk is usually capped at their investment.
Okay. That's a good refresher.
Yeah.
But the catch in this case is that the limited partners were also calling the shots, at least indirectly, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a real legal puzzle.
It is. So picture this.
Okay.
Frigidaire enters into a contract with commercial investors, a limited partnership. Now, commercial investors was being run by Union Properties, Inc., which was a corporation acting as the sole general partner.
Got it. So we've got a corporation running the show.
Right.
But where do Manin and Baxter, the two individuals at the center of this case, fit into all of this?
That's where things get interesting.
Okay.
Manin and Baxter were limited partners in commercial investors, but they also controlled Union Properties, the corporation serving as the general partner. So they were wearing two hats, so to speak.
Ah, I see where this is going. So when commercial investors, the limited partnership, ended up breaching the contract,
yeah,
Frigidaire sued everyone in sight, including Manin and Baxter personally.
Mm-hmm.
I bet Frigidaire's argument was that since those two were essentially running the show,
yeah,
they shouldn't be shielded by limited liability.
Exactly.
And this is where that big question comes in.
Yeah.
Did Manin and Baxter forfeit their limited liability protection simply because they controlled the corporation that was acting as the general partner?
Right.
The stakes were high, for sure.
Absolutely.
So what did the Washington Supreme Court decide?
Well,
did they side with Frigidaire?
They did not. The court ultimately sided with Manin and Baxter, upholding their limited liability.
Wow. Okay. So how did they justify that decision?
Yeah.
It seems counterintuitive that someone could control a company that breaches a contract and not be held responsible.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, the court's reasoning centered on a key legal concept called the corporate veil. Think of it like a protective barrier between a corporation and the individuals who own or control it.
Okay.
This veil shields those individuals from being personally liable for the corporation's debts and actions.
Okay, that makes sense in theory.
Right.
But doesn't that mean people can just hide behind a corporation and do whatever they want without facing any consequences?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
How do we hold individuals accountable if they're acting through a corporation?
Right.
Well, that's where the concept of piercing the corporate veil comes in.
Okay.
Courts can use this legal doctrine to hold individuals liable for corporate actions under certain circumstances. For example, if there's evidence of fraud, if the corporation is basically a sham to hide personal wrongdoing, or if the company doesn't have enough capital to operate legitimately.
So it's like the court saying, we see right through your corporate shenanigans.
Exactly.
Got it.
But in this case, the court found no justification for piercing the corporate veil. Manin and Baxter had clearly separated their actions as individuals from their actions as officers of Union Properties. There was no evidence of any shady dealings.
So the court saw them wearing two distinct hats.
Huh.
And they respected that separation.
Right.
Hold on. Didn't Frigidaire try to use another case to bolster their argument?
They did.
I read something about a case from Texas.
Yes, they did. Frigidaire tried to use a case called Delaney v. Fidelity Lease LTD, where the Texas Supreme Court actually did hold limited partners liable.
Oh, interesting. So how did the Washington Supreme Court distinguish this case from Delaney?
Well, they pointed out a couple of key differences.
Okay.
In Delaney, the corporation and the limited partnership were created at the same time, and the corporation existed solely to run the partnership. It was a very tightly intertwined structure.
So in Delaney, the line between the corporation and the partnership was much blurrier.
Right. The Washington court also noted that in Delaney, there was a concern that the corporate general partner was undercapitalized, meaning it didn't have enough money to cover its potential liabilities.
Right.
This raised red flags about potential misuse of the corporate structure to avoid responsibility.
Ah, that makes sense. But I'm guessing Washington State had its own way of dealing with that issue.
Precisely. The court emphasized that Washington law already addressed undercapitalization through the piercing the corporate veil doctrine.
Okay.
If Frigidaire had evidence that Union Properties was undercapitalized or being used as a sham to dodge liability, they could have argued for that.
So the Washington court was essentially saying, we have tools to deal with shady business practices. But this isn't one of those cases.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
They acknowledged the concerns raised in the Texas case, but ultimately decided those concerns weren't relevant here.
All right. So far, what I'm gathering is that limited partners, even those involved in the management of an LP through a corporate general partner, don't automatically lose their limited liability shield.
That's a great summary. As long as they're careful to maintain a clear separation between their personal actions and their roles within the corporation, and there's no indication of fraud or any attempt to use the corporate structure to hide wrongdoing, the court will generally uphold that protection.
This is making me think a lot about how important it is to understand the legal structure of any business you're dealing with.
It is. And for our listener who asked about this case, I think a big takeaway is that it really pays to be informed.
Yeah.
Whether you're an investor or running a business, understanding these nuances can be crucial in protecting yourself.
Totally agree. This is reminding me that I need to make sure all my legal ducks are in a row for my own ventures.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I think we need to take a quick breather here. This is a lot to process.
I agree. Let's let all this sink in for a moment, and then we'll come back and unpack some more of the implications of this case in part two. Okay, so, you know, as we dive back into this case and see what else we can uncover, I think it's worth taking a closer look at some of the specific language the court used, you know, in their decision.
Yes, good point. The court's wording can be really important in legal cases, right? It helps us understand exactly how they apply the law to the specific facts.
Absolutely. One quote that really jumped out at me was this: if petitioner had not wished to rely on the solvency of Union Properties as the only general partner, it could have insisted that respondents personally guarantee contractual performance. You know, this tells us the court placed some responsibility on Frigidaire.
Interesting. So it's not just about Manon and Baxter's actions. It's also about what Frigidaire knew and could have done to protect their own interests.
Exactly. The court was essentially saying that Frigidaire had options. They knew they were dealing with a corporation as the general partner, and they could have taken steps to minimize their risk. You know, they could have insisted on personal guarantees from Manon and Baxter if they were that concerned about liability.
So in a way, it sounds like Frigidaire knew the risks going in and ultimately had to accept the consequences. This emphasizes the importance of contracts being negotiable, Ryder.
You got it. This case highlights that legal structures have real-world consequences. The court respected the corporate veil because there was no evidence of it being misused, and because Frigidaire had the opportunity to address their concerns during the contract negotiation phase.
Okay, I'm starting to see the bigger picture here. But I have to admit, it still feels a little unfair that Manon and Baxter could essentially control the partnership and escape personal liability while Frigidaire was left to absorb the losses.
I can understand why you might feel that way. It definitely raises questions about fairness. But remember, the court was very careful to emphasize that their decision doesn't give limited partners free rein to act recklessly. They made it clear that the corporate veil should only be upheld when there's no hint of fraud or injustice.
So it's not like you can just hide behind a corporation and do whatever you want without any repercussions.
Not at all. And actually, there's another quote from the court's decision that really drives this point home. They stated, when the shareholders of a corporation, who are also the corporation's officers and directors, conscientiously keep the affairs of the corporation separate from their personal affairs, and no fraud or manifest injustice is perpetrated upon third persons who deal with the corporation's separate entities should be respected. This really highlights the importance of acting ethically and transparently, even when operating within the bounds of legal structures.
So there's a responsibility that comes with the protection of the corporate veil. It's not a free pass to engage in shady business practices.
Precisely. You have to earn that protection by operating in a fair and ethical manner. And if those lines between personal and corporate actions start to blur, if there's any indication that individuals are using the corporation as a shield for personal wrongdoing, the court can absolutely step in and pierce that veil.
It's almost like a trust but verify situation.
Right. That's a great analogy. So just to recap, our key takeaway, limited partners can be involved in the management of an LP through a corporate general partner without automatically losing their limited liability protection. And this is a big but that protection hinges on respecting the separation between personal and corporate actions and ensuring that all business dealings are conducted ethically and transparently.
This is so helpful. I feel like I'm finally starting to grasp the nuances of this case. It's amazing how a case that initially seems so specific to a particular situation can actually have such broad implications for how we think about business structures and liability.
You're absolutely right. This case is a perfect example of how legal principles play out in real-world business scenarios. It underscores the importance of due diligence, knowing who you're doing business with, and protecting your interests, especially when entering into contracts.
I'm also realizing that a little legal knowledge can go a long way. It's like having an extra tool in your toolbox when navigating the complexities of business.
Couldn't agree more. All right, we have one more part to go in our deep dive on this case. In the final part, I'd like to shift gears a bit and explore what this case means for limited partnerships more broadly. We'll consider some broader implications and maybe even pose a few thought-provoking questions for our listener to ponder.
Sounds good to me. Let's take a moment to gather our thoughts, and then we'll wrap this up with some final insights. Okay, so we're back, ready to wrap up our deep dive into Frigidaire Sales Corp. v. Union Properties, Inc. We've covered a lot of ground, you know, from corporate veils to piercing those veils. But before we sign off, I'm curious, did this case have a lasting impact? Like, did it change the way limited partnerships operate?
It's a great question. And while this case didn't fundamentally rewrite limited partnership law, it definitely provided some valuable clarifications.
Okay.
What stands out to me is how the court strongly reinforced the distinction between acting as an individual and acting as a representative of a corporation.
So it's like a reminder to always be mindful of those boundaries.
Yeah.
Especially for limited partners who are also involved in running the corporate general partner.
Exactly. If you're going to benefit from the protections of limited liability, you absolutely need to play by the rules. And this case provides a clear roadmap for doing just that.
Right.
It also highlights the importance of transparency in business dealings. You know, Frigidaire knew Union Properties was the general partner.
Right.
And they could have asked for additional safeguards if they wanted to.
Knowledge is power, as they say. But this brings up an interesting thought. What if Frigidaire hadn't known they were dealing with a corporation as the general partner? Would that have changed things?
That's a fascinating question, and it's something I've pondered myself. It's hard to say for sure, but it's certainly possible the outcome might have been different.
Go ahead.
If Frigidaire had believed they were interacting directly with Manon and Baxter as individuals, they might have had a stronger case for holding them personally liable.
So it's not just about the actions of the limited partners, but also the understanding of the other parties involved. That adds a whole new layer of complexity to the situation.
It absolutely does. This case really underscores the critical role of clear communication and disclosure in business transactions. If you're operating through a corporation, you need to ensure that all parties are aware of that and fully understand the implications.
This is really eye-opening. What started as a seemingly obscure legal case is actually relevant to a much broader audience. It touches on everything from corporate governance and contracts to the very foundation of business structures.
You're spot on. It also reinforces a core principle of our legal system, the rule of law. You know, the court applied established legal principles to a novel situation, creating a precedent that can guide future decisions. That predictability is essential for businesses and individuals alike.
Out of everything we've discussed, what's the one thing you hope our listener takes away from this deep dive?
For me, it's the reminder that legal structures aren't just abstract concepts. They have real-world consequences. Understanding how these structures work and operating within the rules is essential for protecting yourself and achieving your goals.
I love that. And I think it goes without saying that anyone listening who's considering investing in or forming a limited partnership should absolutely consult with a legal professional.
Couldn't agree more. Get expert advice, tailor agreements to your specific situation, and make sure all your legal I's are dotted and lists are crossed.
Well, I think we've officially unpacked this case. It's been a fascinating exploration of limited partnerships, corporate liability, and the ever-important corporate veil. A big thanks to our listener for suggesting this deep dive. It was definitely worth the journey.
And as always, thanks to you for your insightful questions and for helping us make this complex topic engaging and understandable.
Until next time, stay curious and keep those legal wheels turning.